Back together again with you, chatting it up Tuesday style, January 13th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I wondered aloud if the Trump White House would get the U.S. further involved in growing unrest in Iran. We also spoke to CBS News Washington reporter Linda Kenyon on those latest White House statements connected to Iran. Landmark Legal Foundation VP of Legal Affairs Mike O'Neill helped break down oral arguments in a big U.S. Supreme Court case regarding transgender athletes. Republican State Senator Dr. Jeff Gordon dropped by to talk about some possible tax increases facing many state farmers. And Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio took a look ahead to the upcoming short session of the Connecticut General Assembly.
Well, this is about one of those times, again, I figure, from what I can see, just soaking all this in and reading this here. I think we're at another time here where the U.S. kind of looks around. People here in local cities and towns look around here in Connecticut. We look around as a state, right? The nation does. And they say, do we or don't we here? Do we take a step into this or not? And what this is this ongoing unrest you see and hear about in Iran. And again, this has happened three or four times over the past maybe five, ten, a dozen years or so when you have a relatively young population. I don't know whether it's still the youngest, but for a time, Iran had the youngest population in the world, particularly male population, because of what happened during that Iran-Iraq war. But even if that's the case or not, you have a populace of a country that is trying to break free from a repressionist regime. Now, there are some moron politicians in this country, like the Ken Martin, the head of the DNC, the other day, who tries to compare the U.S. and Iran. That means Ken fell out of the high chair once or twice when he was growing up. I hope he didn't hit his head too bad. But right now we have President Trump and up to a couple of hours ago saying to the Iranian people and the protesters here. In fact, I'm looking at it right on the TV screen here. Here's the quote, "Help is on the way," unquote. Now, what does he mean by that? Does he mean launching cyber attacks? Does he mean cutting off the power there? Or does he mean U.S. military involvement? See, Iran is weird. Not that it's a weird country or a weird people, but the situation we've been dealing with since the late 70s. And, you know, you had the Islamic Revolution, because as modern and as Western friendly as the Shah of Iran was, a lot of people didn't like him. A lot of people said he was evil in his own ways as well. So if you're about my age, you remember the Iranian hostage thing. Remember that? Late 70s, 78, 79, 80. That gave us, remember that Nightline, Ted Koppel. Yes, that started, if you remember, with the Iranian hostage crisis, which lasted about a year, year and a half, I think. Finally, they all got freed as Ronald Reagan was either in the middle of taking the oath of office or right beforehand. Maybe some back channel things were said back then. Who knows? You know, but the bottom line is, we might be getting involved, maybe, might be, could be getting involved militarily in Iran. How do you feel about that? I'm trying to make my mind up on how I feel about that. Now, the Iranians are no little jerkwater military here. They've got airplanes, they've got jets, they've got a large, relatively large for a country of its size, military force. But here's the thing that you got to kind of keep in mind here, whether you love Trump or hate Trump, or you're a Democrat or Republican, a D or an R, conservative or liberal or whatever. The things you have to understand here is that you could find flowcharts online. You know what I mean by a flowchart, right? Oh, this leads over there and that leads over there. And look where that runs into. And I've had national security experts on this program say, you know, Paul, you can take just about every terrorist organization in the world, including Hamas, including some others, and they are funded by the Islamic rulers of Iran. So if we have the opportunity to help this regime fall, should we not take the chance? I don't know. You tell me. Looking at all the news breaking here as we speak, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt, speaking to Fox News, said that although diplomacy remains the top choice, the president, quote, is unafraid to use the lethal force and might of the U.S. military if and when he determines it's necessary. So maybe your initial thought is, oh, my God, we can't get involved here. Maybe we can't. What if we did, though? What if we were able to wrestle Iran away? And listen, that's a lot easier said than done. You've got hundreds, thousands of years of tribalism there. Yes, we found that out in Iraq. Yes, we found it out in Afghanistan or whatever. But is it worth a shot? No pun intended here. Seriously. Is it worth taking a chance? If, you know, for some reason, getting rid of the Iranian regime worked, would it work? I have no idea. And remember, Iran's got proxies all over the world, too. And look, they've already said that there would likely be targeting of Americans, American assets, Israel, Israeli assets, and all that. Is that worth it? You tell me. Karoline Leavitt said, quote, airstrikes would be one of the many options that are on the table for the commander-in-chief. She recently said, quote, he's made it quite clear he certainly does not want to see people being killed in the streets of Tehran. So would you be okay with this if any military force the U.S. uses eventually stops any killing here? Or are you saying no way here? It's an interesting question that's, you know, sneaking up on us here. So you tell me. Got the phone lines open here, text line open as well. Already getting reactions to our question of the day at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Should the U.S. military get involved to aid protesters in the ongoing unrest in Iran? If the Iranian regime is on the edge now, is tilting on the edge, should the U.S. go over there and say, oh, sorry, didn't mean to push you over, Mr. Ayatollah, sir? Maybe we want to help the Iranian people and the fundamentalists go bye-bye there. Maybe we want to help get in on a society where, I don't know, women aren't treated like pieces of meat. Maybe women won't be forced to walk around where you can just see the slits of their eyes. Wearing hijabs and burqas, maybe. Oh, by the way, you notice how loud, quote unquote, the U.S. women's groups are about all that. Oh man, you know, Trump breaks wind the wrong way, the women's groups go nuts. But you know, women treated by like property and pieces of meat in the Islamic world, and they don't say boo. So what do you think? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. U.S. involved in toppling the Iranian regime or not? You tell me. We continue right here on WICC on a Tuesday. All right, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Hey, and by the way, and I mentioned this yesterday, and there was a great social media post by J.K. Rowling. You know her from the Harry Potter series. She's very outspoken on some things. She's very liberal on some things. And she's very conservative on the other things. And one thing J.K. Rowling can't stand is the far progressive left picking and choosing their battles and not being consistent. And she's been pointing out here, and she's right, think about this. We're not getting the usual howls and sobs of indignation from the women's groups and the people that are, oh, the people that worried about what was going on in Palestine. Well, where are you with Iran? She said, I'll read the exact quote. I don't have it pulled up yet. But she has a point. The usual Hollywood phonies who all wore their anti-ICE buttons on Sunday. Oh, look at this. And they went to show their, you know, they went to show their anti-ICE pins on Sunday. It's like Ricky Gervais said a couple years ago. Remember what Ricky Gervais said? Was he the Golden Globes or the Academy Awards? When he looked out at all the A-listers and said that if Al-Qaeda had a streaming service, you'd be yelling at your agent to get you on there. No wonder Ricky Gervais doesn't. Yeah, he actually said that. Something to the effect of, oh, come on, shut up. You know, for God's sake, well, that if Al-Qaeda had a streaming service, you'd want to be on it. Oh, my God, that was beautiful. But I wonder where all the uber leftists are and the uber progressives are with all this going on. Because if you notice, they haven't said a word. They haven't said a word. And Donald Trump, whether you like him or not, love him or hate him, that's not the issue here. At least he's coming out and telling Iran, hey, stop killing people. Have we heard that from the usual suspects in Hollywood? Or even people, I don't know, has Dick Blumenthal said anything about the Iranian butchery that's going on? What about Chris Murphy? Have they said anything? Maybe they have. Oh, they're all out there about ICE, though. ICE, 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 baby. Right? They're all out there like crazy. Have they said anything about what's going on in Iran? And I'm not saying they have to agree with me, but have they said anything? Rosa DeLauro, Jim Himes, Johanna Hayes, Joe Courtney, John Larson, who's running for his 433rd term. But here they are. And I'm not saying they can't say anything about ICE, but you talk about the two-faced hypocrisy by some of our lawmakers about how they pick and choose their battles. Oh my God. You know why Democrats don't say anything about Iran? Because they're too afraid of the left side of their party. The anti-Israel jerks out there. Don't criticize Iran because Iran hates the Jews and Iran hates Israel. Therefore, we love Iran. Oh, you shouldn't say that, Paul. I shouldn't? Why shouldn't I? You tell me, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. And again, I'm not saying we should or should not get militarily involved in Iran. That's not the issue here. Where's the consistency? All we heard from the left when things were really bad in Gaza with Hamas and Israel. Oh, the genocide, the butchery. All right, yeah, it was pretty bad. Notice how the phonies are awfully quiet now, what's going on in Iran. And maybe they don't want to get involved. I get it. I understand it. But as J.K. Rowling pointed out the other day, is this a case of, you know, the enemy of my friend? Is that what we're looking at here? On Monday, tens of thousands of pro-government demonstrators took to the streets of Tehran in a state-organized rally intended to show support for the regime. Meantime, footage circulating online in recent days showed dozens of bodies lined up outside Tehran's morgue as the Norway-based NGO Iran Human Rights confirmed that at least 700 people were killed in the protests. More than 10,600 arrests. Now, I get that. I understand that. This stuff has happened down through history. But keep an eye on who talks about this and who talks about the killing and the butchery going on from a regime that's been a pain in our ass since 1980. Wouldn't it be really good to get rid of them and allow people who live in Iran to move back, get out of the Stone Age and live in the present century, and let a woman be a woman and not have to walk around in a sack all day? And maybe you disagree, that's fine, but notice the people who are being quiet about this. The same people who were screaming and yelling, Palestine this, Palestine that, Gaza this, Gaza that. Where are they now? What are they afraid of? Where were all the pro-women buttons in Iran the other night at the Golden Globes? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I missed those. But they had those anti-ICE buttons on, right?
Maybe I should cover the White House, too, like Linda Kenyon does for CBS News. There you go. Me and the White House press corps. Linda, good afternoon. Great to have you here. Linda, I don't know how you people do it. God bless you. I see these crazy news conferences. But I guess today, Linda, good to have you with us, we're talking tougher on Iran. Is that what we're seeing here? What's up with that?
Yes, a lot of tough talk on Iran. The president has encouraged the protesters in Iran to continue their protests.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he says he has canceled his conversations with Iranian officials. So it's really a lot of tough talk. He posted on his social media this morning that he said Iranian patriots keep protesting.
Yeah.
Iran warns the U.S. military and Israel that it will be targets if Washington uses force to protect the demonstrators. So it's really ramping up. At the same time, he has said help is on its way to the Iranian people. He just finished off a speech at the Detroit Economic Club where he said that he's increasing sanctions against any countries that do business with Iran. Mm. So this is what he means, I suppose, when he said help is on its way.
Yeah, throwing a curveball again. Curveball a day from Mr. Trump. Linda Kenyon, CBS News. Linda, thank you. Stay safe there, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it. Linda Kenyon there from CBS News, yeah. You may remember about 5 years ago, some high school athletes up around the Hartford area, track and field athletes, they were not too happy that they were defeated in records set by biological males. And there was a case taken up on their behalf. I think that case is still active. I think it was the Alliance for Defending Freedom. We had one of the attorneys on. I remember about that. The case in front of the U.S. Supreme Court today, not directly connected to Connecticut, but it's interesting. Both proponents and opponents of transgender athletes, mainly biological boys and men, to play and compete against biological women and girls. Both sides interpreting Title IX pretty much the same way for their side. Joining us right now, Mike O'Neill, our pal, Landmark Legal Foundation, VP of Legal Affairs. And it's interesting because this is a case, Mike, that's looking at the same statute kind of in the same way, right?
Yeah, a couple. Well, actually, two cases, right? And so
yeah.
There was Title IX, as you were just talking to, was an issue in the second case. The first case is, it's important to talk about both cases.
Okay.
Because the first case, this was a case out of Idaho, involves the constitutionality of these laws. So what happened was Idaho passed a law, really how you kind of, your perspective on how you approach this. Idaho passed a law protecting women's sports. In other words, saying that only biological females could compete against biological females in high school and college athletics in the state of Idaho. And other states have passed laws similar to that. I think, as you said, maybe Connecticut had done that or something, or other. I think it was about 27 states have done that. And the question in that case is the constitutionality of it, whether that law violates the equal protection rights of individuals who are transgender, of biological males who now have transitioned or identify as females and now are trying to seek to compete as females. And whether the question there is the constitutionality of those laws, whether it violates their equal protection laws. The second case, of course, is what you were talking about, is Title IX. What's Title IX? That's Title IX of the Education Act of 1972, which essentially established women's sports, right? Said if you're going to have men's sports, you're going to have women's sports, and women's sports can establish an equal playing field for men and women, and which kind of was the advent of women's athletics, women's college athletics. We've talked about it for years. So that the second case was whether these laws, and that was a law in West Virginia, violated Title IX, whether these individuals, these trans individuals, had some sort of rights to compete as what they identified as under Title IX, and whether it violated their Title IX rights there, whether they were a protected class.
And Mike, I guess there are, I mean, there's ways around this, right? For example, I know some states are saying, well, okay, but you need to have a certain amount of years of hormonal therapy. You've got to go through a muscle mass measurement. A lot of states, Mike, right, they're not trying an all or nothing approach here. But what might the court rulings here do to affect those?
Well, I think what the court's going to say is here is going to look at this and is going to say whether there's an interest. It depends. When we're talking about constitutionality here, it's all the level of scrutiny that a court is going to apply to a law that involves these sorts of that makes some sort of distinguishing characteristics, right? Yeah. So the law here is, in all likelihood, what the pro-trans people were trying to advocate for was that this is an intermediate standard, and that the state's independent important interest the interest that the states are saying is, look, we want to ensure an even playing field. We want to ensure that biological females have a fair shot at competing. And if you allow biological males to come in, even no matter what degree to which they're engaged in these hormonal treatments, that it's going to interfere with their ability to have a fair playing field. And so it's just the equities aren't going to be fair. And that's the states right there. And then the question here is whether that's going to be a rational basis or whether that's going to be subject to some sort of intermediate level of scrutiny. I don't think it's going to be subject to an intermediate level of scrutiny, Paul, because in the Scrimeti decision, if you recall, Justice Barrett was very clear that said only laws that discriminate on the basis of gender. And again, we're not talking about gender here. Male and female, these are laws that this is a law that, again, alleging transgender, that transgender rights, transgender individuals don't have those sorts of laws that might adversely affect them aren't subject to intermediate scrutiny. They're subject to a rational basis. And so justification, again, is, hey, the state's going to say we want to protect women's sports. We want to protect the fairness of this. We're not going to get into this as applied distinction here, whether you've taken enough testosterone or whether you're not, and individual cases here. We're going to look at the law on its face, and we're going to look at the law in general, and we're going to say, does the state have a rational basis for it? And I think you certainly do. And then we're going to defer to the state legislature here in this. And so, therefore, I think they're going to uphold these laws and rule against the transgender individuals, if you want to put it in that way. Protect women's sports.
Depending upon the way you look at it. Mike, thank you. Landmark Legal Foundation, VP of Legal Affairs, our buddy, our pal, Mike O'Neill. Mike, thanks. Appreciate the time, brother.
You're welcome, Paul. Have a great day.
You too. All right, we shift from that in the nation's capital to right here in Connecticut. And this is the beauty of this program. We go from gender rights and athletics, which affect people here in Connecticut, to, shockingly, taxes here in Connecticut. No, you're kidding. Apparently, now I'm not a farmer, but I've been told, as they told me in boot camp, I don't know, but I've been told, no, I was never in boot camp. Tax increases on farmers up to three times what they're paying. Republican State Senator Jeff Gordon is with us. Jeff's a district, by the way, has a lot of farmers. Jeff, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm very good, Dr. Gordon. So, what are we hearing, Jeff? Double and triple some taxes on Connecticut farmers? I know that they're very upset. Explain to my audience what's going on here.
Well, the situation farmers are upset about, and my Republican colleagues and I are upset as well. That's why we've taken swift action to try to deal with this and had a big press conference today. So I appreciate your covering this and letting your listeners know what's happened. So what happened is towards the latter part of last year, a five-year review of land use values for things that are in what we call Public Act 490. That's where farmers and others can put aside like open space, agricultural fields, timberlands, even swampland and have a tax reduction on property tax, provided that the land is kept undeveloped or used for farming. And farmers rely upon this heavily because they're big landowners. They need hundreds and hundreds of acres to grow their crops and also to feed the livestock. All that hay and corn needs a lot of acres to grow. And so the state went ahead with the Department of Agriculture and the Office of Policy and Management, ended up doing an extremely flawed analysis to try to figure out how to change the land values. Didn't really include much in the way of farmers around the state, it seems, and published this And in some cases, the taxes on farmers will go up 3, 4, 5 times. Oh. And to show how crazy this is, swampland, you can't build, you can't grow on swampland. It just is there as a swamp. Went from, I think, $40 an acre up to $970 an acre. Who comes up with that?
Jeff, is this...
So of course farmers are upset.
Is this just a cash grab by Hartford? I mean, look, I'm a dummy when it comes to this thing. And you said it was a flawed analysis. I mean, we all know when we get our properties revalued in our hometown, it's a very, you know, specific process. You get notifications. Was this just done half-arsed or what? What are we looking at here?
Well, you know, I certainly hope it wasn't done, you know, in a bad way on purpose. I think what ended up really happening was is that this analysis was done. Folks in state agencies chose not to really fact check this, see why these numbers were going to change this way in such a screwy way, divorced from reality, and just went ahead and published it. Farmers, rightly so, got upset. How can they afford this? We're in an affordability crisis. Farmers, you know, many times have to carry huge debt in order to pay for everything that's expensive to run a farm. It's not as if they're millionaires. And rightly so, they're concerned. They may not be able to keep the farms. They might have to sell farmland to developers in order to make money. My Republican colleagues and I heard about this very recently. We worked with state agencies, Connecticut Farm Bureau, farmers. We've gotten this temporarily fixed a little bit.
Okay.
But what we're really pushing for is stop these increases, first of all, because the numbers make no sense. And second, let farmers have a seat at the table when these decisions are made, because who knows better about farmland than farmers? Not bureaucrats in Hartford. Yeah. They know. And also, we want to, in the future, have good oversight of these agencies doing this type of stuff and make certain that if there is going to be an increase, it's capped so we don't have these massive increases that completely whack farmers. And what I'm doing, my Republican colleagues are doing, is we are working together for the farmers because we need them. Otherwise, we don't have local jobs, we don't have local food, and the huge amount of money that they deal with helping the state economy. So this is a real serious issue.
Jeff, thank you. Dr. Jeff Gordon, Republican State Senate member, a voicing concern about some farmland revaluation. Jeff, good to have you on. Keep us up to date on this, all right, if you will. We'd appreciate it.
Will do. Thank you.
Thanks. Dr. Jeff Gordon there, Republican State Senate member. Part of the state's got a lot of farms. How about that? Can you imagine that? Well, 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 yes. It's about that time. Every Tuesday, we want you to check out the Hartford Portfolio, blogger Megan Portfolio of the Yankee Institute, keeping an eye on the bad things that have happened, the bad things that are happening, and the less than great things that probably will happen in the immediate future. Good afternoon, Ms. Portfolio. How are you?
Oh, so formal today. I am doing well, and yourself, Paul.
Well, I you know, I try to change it up. I try not to be the dopey me every so often, you know?
You're amazing. Don't ever say you're dopey.
Excellent. Keep showering praise on me. I love this. No, but seriously, boy, should we now? I guess we have what here? We have the short session, teeny weeny, the short session coming up in the
it's a ball I love.
You like that? So now, what? Like, what? It's an election year. They can't do that much damage in Hartford, can they? Wink, wink.
Oh, you know the answer to that. Yeah. So this is a short session. It starts on February 4th. It's 3 months long, and yes, it is an election year, but literally these lawmakers consider it like legislative speed dating. It's like, oh, we meet a bill and fall in love, get married, and then we send the taxpayers the bill for the catering. That's what it's turned into. So, so this is the time of year. It's like Christmas for lobbyists and activist groups. They're putting together their wish lists, and Big Labor was one of the first to publish theirs. Oh, and we've got a whole mess of shenanigans that they want to try to get rammed through this 3 month session, which, mind you, the short session should be for like budget fixes and technical fixes, but it's just turned into like a monstrosity.
Yeah.
So one of the ones that kind of made me chuckle is they want to start regulating AI in the workplace. But the way they want to do it is they actually want to make it part of, like, their bargaining. And when you talk about AI, it's not just like, you know, the Terminator and Skynet. It's AI is like autocorrect. It's spell check. It's Google. So it's like, what message are you sending to businesses that want to come here? Like, oh, you can come here, but any use of technology is going to be up for bargaining with the unions. And then they jump into, so they have, it's like the war on technology this session.
Yeah.
So they're now at war with the self-checkout machines. They want to start regulating those as well.
Wait a minute, what?
Yeah, they want to, well, you know, what do you think happens when you keep jacking up the minimum wage? And, you know, when you're looking at a supermarket specifically, they don't survive on ginormous markups at the supermarket level. It's very, very thin margins for them. And, you know, one way to save money and try to keep costs down for groceries is the automated checkout.
Yeah.
I mean, I love them. I go shopping frequently with a disabled person.
Yeah.
And they're in like a transport
sure,
chair.
Sure.
It makes my life so much easier because I can throw my bag on there, her bag on there. It's just a pain in the butt to go to the checkout.
And, you know, I remember, Megan, years ago covering a couple of strikes, and one was a Stop and Shop strike, like years and years ago. And I remember talking to the union local, and we were talking about this very thing. And I said to him, I said, so the self-checkouts, I said, is that in every specific contract? He goes, yeah, it is. We sit down with the company, and we say, hey, X amount of self-checkouts are open in the morning, in the middays, at night, on overnights, you know, if it's a 24-hour store.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because you know why? Because that's an agreement between
exactly.
the workers.
Exactly.
And the company, the business.
Yep.
It's not a mandate coming from Hartford.
Oh.
It gets better.
Oh, now
they,
what?
Now what? They want to bust open the guardrails. What is that? They have like this. They call it restrictive roadblocks.
Oh, no.
I'm trying to be all funny. But so they want to bust the guardrails, but they also want to increase taxes on wealthy. I'm not sure what they mean, wealthy.
Of course, that's shocking. I'm stunned.
Pay their fair share.
And then they want to, so
we have surpluses year after year. We've been having these great surpluses.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to last forever, but
Because of what party? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yes.
But they want to take, instead of, so these surpluses arrive because they're taking too much money out of the taxpayers.
Yeah.
It's our money.
Yeah.
They're taking too much. If you're having like this multi-million, you know, millions and millions of dollars in surplus, you're probably taking too much of our money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, instead of giving it back to us, they want to use it to give themselves raises and hire more state employees. And
We got more. What else?
So we got the war against technology. Now we got the war against business.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to deny tax incentives to companies whose executives earn more than 100 times the average worker.
Oh, my God. Shut up. Oh, not you. Jeez.
And then they want to have some kind of a payroll tax.
Of course.
They call it like the low-wage employer's payroll tax.
Of course.
So if I guess if they have employees that are on getting some kind of subsidy, they want to tax businesses for that.
You know, Megan, on my show, I say, folks, do you wonder why every year these surveys come out? Fox Business, CNBC, The Wall Street Journal, Market Watch, ABC Business. When you look at Connecticut's business competitiveness, every year we suck. We have some
Absolutely.
Of the lowest ranking, and people sitting there. And Megan, what CFO or CEO is going to look at our numbers and say, boy, I can't wait to locate there?
I'd be down south. I wouldn't come here. And it's a shame because our state is awesome.
Yes.
We have like seasons. It is a beautiful state.
Yeah.
We are smack in between Boston and New York.
Excellent.
People should be like clamoring to come here. Business should be like, we want to be in Connecticut.
That's right.
I mean, we have great schools. We have a great workforce.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have everything except for a government that makes it desirable for a business to move here. And it doesn't stop there. It's just a war out on everything.
Yeah.
Now they're attacking towns and cities by having the state impose a slew of unfunded mandates. Uh-huh. None of these ideas, I want to preface, are bad ideas, but these are, again, this is between the towns, the taxpayers, and the union. So they want to dictate paraeducator pay. I don't have a problem with paraeducators making as much as they can. I think they're very valuable. They're a valuable resource to our school system. But that's a local issue.
Exactly.
They
it's a board of
mandate pensions to firefighters and police officers.
It's a
board I don't necessarily agree with that or disagree with that, but is that Hartford's job?
And it
even gets to like silly stuff. They want to they want the state to mandate barriers on buses to protect the transit drivers from violence. That's great, but again, not a state issue. That's a local issue.
And if there's so much violence on buses and school buses, do you think maybe there's another problem? Oh no, we can't talk about that.
We don't talk about that.
No, we don't
silly,
talk about
silly
that.
Boy.
All right,
and then then they just step out. They're also stepping out of their lane. They want to have absentee ballot reform. They want like no excuse absentee voting through the mail.
Yeah.
They are adamantly against any form of education in the state that's not public school. So anything that could help
they hate
lower
charter
income children,
schools. They hate charter schools because charter schools tend to help Black and Hispanic students. They want to keep Black and Hispanic students under their thumb. It is.
Oh, they're even against. They're even adamantly opposed to something as simple as getting a tax credit scholarship. So if I want to donate to certain organizations that give kids, low income kids, the option to go to private school, they're against that.
Which a lot of blue states do. This is not. This shouldn't be a partisan thing. No, but again, you know what? And please, trust me. There is nobody smart enough in the General Assembly to do anything with artificial intelligence. Please don't touch it. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
My head's going to break. All right, folks, check it out. Megan Portfolio, the Hartford Portfolio and the Yankee Institute. How's the dog?
Oh, we're going through training because this online training program he's just not acting like a gentleman on his walks.
Well, you had him fixed, and now he thinks the whole world's a singles bar. You know, that.
He just barks at everything and everyone, and he's not a gentleman, and it's embarrassing.
And he's barking.
We're doing positive reinforcement training.
And he's barking at other dogs, which the barks actually mean, hey, toots. You know,
hey, lady.
Hey, lady. All right. Thanks, Megan. Appreciate it. Take care.
Bye.
All right. The trials and tribulations of Megan Portfolio. And what's her dog? Bruno, I think? Yeah.